Hey, it's me, Tim Ranzetta, co-founder of NextGen Personal Finance. Thank you for tuning in to this NGPF podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Yanelli. She is joined by Nika Booth, who's the creator of Debt-Free Gonna Be. That's an Instagram platform and website dedicated to helping people navigate their debt. The specific focus, student loan debt. Nika is going to share her own personal story, her journey of dealing with six figures of student loan debt, and how she personally hopes to benefit from the public student loan forgiveness program. You're going to learn more about how that program works, who qualifies, and how public service employees, that includes nonprofits and those working in schools, can make sure they can take advantage of the program too. Enjoy.
All right. So excited for this conversation today. We're going to dive into PSLF with Nika Booth. And first up, I just want to welcome Nika, have you introduce yourself to everybody. So officially, welcome to the show, Nika. So happy to have you.
I'm so happy to be here. Hi, everyone. I am Nika Booth, aka Debt-Free Gonna Be on Instagram for any of you that are on there. I am a single Pringle on a journey to tackle my six-figure debt. And so far, I've paid off over $75,000 since I started, and all that's left are my student loans. And that is part of the reason why I'm so passionate about talking about student loans and keeping up with all the policy changes and trying to help people get out of student loan debt.
Yes. First of all, I love single Pringle. That's so cute. I love that. I know that so many people are going to identify with you in terms of like having gone through the struggle of like really trying to get their financial life together, paying off debt, navigating possibly multiple different debts that they owe. So it's just so relatable to have you. And it's fresh to be able to hear from somebody who's navigating it currently, kind of wrapping up with, you know, just that last chunk. And, you know, it's inspiring to be able to hear that, like, listen, this is possible. It's just that there are certain strategies, there's certain, you know, tools. And of course, there's knowledge that you need. But we're going to get to all that good stuff. But first, I just want to learn a little bit more about you. We've connected a little bit in the world of influencing on social media, but never really got a chance to dive deep. So I'm curious about your professional pathway. What led you to like where you are now, and also any, you know, kind of like info about what you studied in school and maybe how that may have played a role in your professional path.
Absolutely. So I am a federal government employee. That's usually where I stick to it, because, you know, I just need a little bit of privacy, but, you know, so I've been a federal government employee for 12 years now. I got into student loan debt like most people, because of pressure or the desire, right, to go to school. I'm a first generation college student, and everyone in my family was like, oh, you know, take on student loans. I mean, they wanted me to go to school, but they had no idea how I was going to pay for it, right? No one had any money to cough up to help, right? So student loans was my way to go, and it was considered that good debt. So it's like, okay, cool. And I studied biology and chemistry undergrad, and biotechnology for my master's in grad school. And, you know, I went to school and I signed that promissory note, that master promissory note that you get when you're 17, 18 years old. Most people don't read it in its entirety, but it follows you along your entire path through college if you continue to take out student loans, right? So not knowing, not having people to teach me about debt and proper debt management and personal finance, you know, I just did not grow up in a financially literate household. I took on way more student loan debt than I needed. And, you know, I had a surplus at the end of each semester. I was taking out the absolute max that they would allow me to be dispersed. And I would get those refund checks is what they were called, but they weren't really refund checks and they weren't really my money. So like, you know, at that age, I know, hey, I'm gonna have to pay this stuff back. But you're not really thinking that far ahead, right? That's years away. You're living your best life. You've got peers. You're meeting new people. You're going to school. You're going to classes. You're having fun. You're not thinking about the implication of graduating, if you're even able to graduate, because some people don't. But being graduating and then now having this huge bill that you have to pay shortly after graduating, and life may not even work out the way you want it to, and you may not even have the money to make that payment, or you don't acquire the financial, personal finance skills to properly manage your money to be able to make the payment. And that's kind of where I landed. And because I was never really prepared to make my student loan payment once I went into repayment, I kept deferring, or more so I kept asking for forbearances. And for anyone who's not familiar with the way forbearances work, interest continues to accrue. And that interest is capitalized or added back onto your loan balance. And the cycle keeps continuing. So now that new balance with the interest that just accrued in the previous month now starts to accrue interest. And it's a really messed up cycle. And it's why a lot of people, including myself, now owe $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 more in student loan debt than they did when they originally took out the loans, despite actually making payments on the loans. So today I stand before you having almost $134,000 in student loan debt, roughly $25,000 more than I originally took out.
Wow. And you know, Nika, I think that's a great point about the way that people take out student loans. There's a process that's sort of rushed through, right? You get this promissory note. First of all, you don't even know what it is,
right?
You're at an age where you don't have the knowledge to understand the terms and conditions in these very intricate contracts that agreements that you're signing.
Yeah.
And you don't actually realize that by the time you go to start making your payments, your loan will have ballooned to a much higher amount than what you're agreeing to take on.
Yeah.
And if at 18, 19, if that was really made clear through that process of applying and being granted student loans, like, I think we would be in a very different place, because the reason why there's, I believe, a student loan debt crisis is because so many people were misled or disinformed, right? Yeah. Like, didn't realize that what they were signing on wasn't the amount they were going to pay back. That was the low end, right? It was only going up from there, but that's not made clear, right?
It's not made clear. And I just want to add two more things to that. One, you know, again, and we'll get into it because we're here to talk about PSLF, the programs that were supposed to also work to help people pay those loans back, they aren't working, right? And so that's another thing that it's adding on to this crippling debt that we see. I mean, it's at $1.75 trillion.
Trillion.
And it continues to grow. At one point before this 40-year record inflation hit, at one point student loans grew 6 times more than the US economy.
Oof.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to add is that during the time that let's say you've gone to undergrad. So you have student loans already, and you go back to school, you go to graduate school. What you'll end up getting are these statements. They're interest statements. But at the top of the interest statement, it says, or even if you're in forbearance, at the top of the interest statement, it says, this is not a bill. I can't tell you how many of those I got. I saw, oh, this isn't a bill. Okay, cool. Toss it in the trash. Wow. But not pay, that was telling me, right? How much interest was actually accruing during that time on my loans that would be added to my loan balance. But to your point, you're right. It's not clear that how this works, how borrowing and repayment and student loan interest works is not clear. And there's a counseling that's supposed to take place, like before you take out your first loan. I can't even tell you if I did it and what the takeaway was, obviously.
Yeah.
So a lot is needed when it comes to, first of all, I don't think the federal government should be in the student loan lending game in the first place, but that's a whole other conversation. But a lot needs to take place to help mitigate the likelihood that generations after us are going to be dealing with what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. That is such a great point, that it does create this generational cycle. If it just started and ended with us, that wouldn't create this, you know, real serious crisis around how it's going to affect multiple generations. For us at NGPF, that's one of the big things. It's like really teaching the next generation so that they can be informed consumers and informed borrowers, right? And there's research that shows out of a longitudinal study that came out of Utah and so many other states that have financial literacy as a core part of their high school curriculum, have evidence, have studies that show that when you get a personal finance or financial literacy class in high school, which includes understanding interest rates and borrowing terms and conditions, that you have a much better outcome when it comes to your credit score, and you make much smarter decisions when it comes to borrowing money for college, meaning that you don't exhaust, you don't even go to private student loans at all until you exhaust your lowest interest rate federal loan options first.
Yeah.
And you navigate loans by comparing them for specifically the lowest interest rate offered to you.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people don't know what that even means when they're going into student loan borrowing. And so they might, you know, be looking at the amount that they're being offered, or they might be looking at, you know, different things that are not the leading indicator that really helps them out financially in the long run. So personal finance education is such a critical part of filling these gaps that we're talking about in the lack of knowledge and understanding of how this whole thing works. So, absolutely. You know, we're here today with all these educators on. So I really want to commend you all, because you're in front of these students ensuring that they are prepared to make these decisions, rather than previous generations who made decisions not being well prepared for those. And, you know, just kind of being tossed in there to the ring to have to choose without much knowledge or understanding.
Thank you.
We're here today to talk about PSLF, right? So let's get into it. Folks want to know, how can I get my loans forgiven via the public service loan forgiveness program? Any educator who is a public school teacher, you know, who's working in education, is doing public service. And so this is very relevant to the NGPF community of educators and teachers all across the country. So essentially the question is, you know, what is the program and how can one qualify for it?
Okay, so the program, the way it's supposed to work is you would have any remaining loan balance forgiven if you work full-time in public service or any not-for-profit, that's important, not-for-profit organization, made 120 qualifying payments, I'll get to that, qualifying payments in an income-driven repayment plan. After that 120 payments, you would then qualify for public service loan forgiveness. Your remaining loan balances would be forgiven tax-free. So it would not be considered as income tax, all right? When I say qualifying payment, here's the red tape or the criteria, so to speak. The qualifying payment had to be the full amount of whatever your monthly payment was. And it had to be received within 15 days of your due date while also being employed full-time by a qualifying employer. Okay. That was the way it was supposed to work. And I know we're going to talk about this, but there have been some temporary changes and there are some permanent proposed changes down the line that would eliminate that red tape and allow more people to qualify for the program as well as qualify for public service loan forgiveness.
Got it. So for a teacher specifically, teaching, 120 payments would mean 10 years, right?
10 years, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're teaching for 10 years and you have been making your payments every month for all of those 10 years, you essentially at this point should qualify any remaining amount that you still owe should be able to be forgiven fairly easily at this point today. And we know that like some of the changes that you mentioned that are kind of like temporary changes and some that are proposed to be more long-term, the temporary changes, these are through October 31st, 2022, right?
Correct.
So can you tell us about those changes and how they help make
let me back up. Absolutely. Let me back up for 1 second. Because let's say you've been teaching for longer than 10 years. That's okay too, because the 120 payments don't have to be consecutive. And someone actually just dropped that in. Yes, they don't have to be consecutive, but I also want to make clear that the payments would have had to have been made after October of 2007, because that was when the program was implemented. So, you know, for anyone who might be a little older or had been paying prior to October of 2007, those payments would not qualify for the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. So now let's fast forward to what's called the PSLF limited waiver, or just simply limited waiver. So this was introduced in October of last year. And it actually relaxes those requirements. So if your payment was received after the 15 days. I mean, think about it. You know, sometimes people are so strapped with student loan debt. Those payments are high. My payments at one time, actually pre-COVID, were $847. It might take some people more than a two-week pay cycle, or if they get paid once a month or something along those lines, people might need that flexibility to be able to make their loan payment beyond 15 days, right? So the limited waiver relaxes that. So if you made a payment anytime during that month, it will now count. And on top of that, the payment doesn't have to be the full payment. So let's say again, like I said, my payment was $847. What if I only paid $750? It still counts. They're also relaxing the requirement for you being in an income-driven repayment plan. Now, any repayment plan would count towards PSLF. Again, all under the limited waiver, only until October 31st. And there's some rumors, you know, floating around saying that the deadline would be extended because there's still millions of people who qualify for forgiveness right now at this very moment and still haven't done their paperwork.
That's right.
And if they're just waiting for people to get their paperwork in so that they can cancel these loans. And what I love about this waiver is automatic. So once you fill out the limited waiver, which is the same form you would use to certify your employer or to get a payment count update. Once you fill that out, you're in the system. They know that, okay, you've certified your employment for however many years, dating all the way back to, you know, 2007. Mm-hmm. And they continue to count. And if you qualify, you hit that 120, automatically your loans are forgiven. If you get more than 120, guess what? The Department of the Treasury Department is sending checks to people in the mail who have met and exceeded the 120 payments. I had a coworker just a month after the limited waiver went live, and he called me and he said, I just got 10 checks in the mail from the Department of Treasury because of this waiver. And he's done.
Wow.
He's done. So this is why I've been trying to, like, this is why I talk about the PSLF and the limited waiver so much, because the program and the change, the temporary change, is there waiting for people to just put your paperwork in.
Right.
And you can, like, it's a game changer for so many people. And it's like, I get goosebumps. I get excited because it's happening. And even if they're not getting full forgiveness, because let's say they haven't met the 120, because you do have to still have a 120 qualifying payment. They're getting partial forgiveness because they may have some loans that actually qualify, you know, actually met the 120, or their payment counts are jumping from like minuscule amounts, like 20 to like 100.
Right.
You know, when I originally submitted my waiver, my first payment count update was $5,960 across my loans. Today, I'm at 107, 106, 100.
Right.
So we're talking less than 2 years and they're still not done counting. So.
Right. But you know, these changes that you're talking about are so huge, because one of the things I noticed is that data from like right before COVID in 2019, they put out a lot of data about 99% of the applications for loan forgiveness have been rejected.
Yeah.
So only like 1%, less than 2% of people who put in the applications and did all this actually had their loans forgiven. And so a lot of people straight up gave up.
Oh, for sure.
They just gave up on, like, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
They're not even approving people's applications. They're rejecting 99%. That means everybody who's applying is getting rejected. What's the point of putting this program together if it mm-hmm. doesn't even work? But now we're seeing that, you know, these changes that you just talked to us through, including the ones that run through August 31st and some of the proposed ones, are trying to fix that, recognizing, A, that's a problem. 99% people being rejected is straight up, no other word for it. It's a problem.
Absolutely. Yep.
And B, how do we alleviate it and make it so that folks are getting their applications approved? So can you talk about, like, why would people get rejected from PSLF? Because I've seen a couple questions in chat, and I know a lot of people are like, well, I have people who, by all measures that Nika just described, should qualify, but they're getting rejected.
And tell them that they should go ahead and reapply before October 31st, because again, they're not automatically putting people through the system who had gotten rejected before and qualified, but they are making it, again, easier. So please, I'm encouraging you, encourage people that you know that's in your circle to apply. Even if they're not even close, just submit the paperwork. So people were getting rejected for a couple of reasons. One being the system was completely broken. That program has been broken since its inception. And the process for not only applying to the program to see if your employer qualified, but making payments and applying for forgiveness through the program once you actually met your 120 payment requirement was confusing. It wasn't clear. So people were getting caught up on technicalities, a missing signature, the wrong date, the wrong form or outdated form. But on top of that, the last administration, being the Trump administration, was full of people who actually weren't proponents of debt relief. And so Betsy DeVos, who was the Department of Education secretary during that administration, she actually implemented quite a few changes to both this program and another program called the Borrower Defense Program to make it harder for people to obtain forgiveness. I mean, they didn't have a vast database for employer searches. So you really didn't know if your employer qualified or not. And even if you did know that your employer qualified, for whatever reason, the system was rejecting. Wow. And I'm one of those people who actually got defeated and said, well, what's the point?
Right.
And I stopped certifying my employment, although I was still actively full-time employed in public service. I said, well, I can't bet on this system. I can't bet on this program to help give me relief. I've got to go ahead and I've got to get rid of my debt myself. And that's really how I kind of got to debt-free going to be. I'm so excited to see what this waiver is really doing for people, because a 99% rejection rate, it's absurd.
It really
for people
is.
who've committed themselves to public service. They're taking pay cuts, you know, they're dedicating their time, their lives, and their career to the service of other people.
That's right. Yeah. And they're really coming in expecting the promise that was made to them through this program. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely. It's
like, we have a couple questions and I had a couple more that I prepared, but I do think, you know what, we're here. We have folks that are eager. Let's go into these. So first one is, how can anyone, let alone a teacher, make the payments that high that are required to make every month and work nonprofit? You know, and in this comment says, you know, you can rent for less than that in this area and still couldn't eat with that. OMG.
Yeah, no, I understand. So the good thing about this waiver, and I'm going to lean all into the waiver, because typically when you can't afford your payment, you can absolutely contact your lender and you can see what payment options you have, right? You can also go into an economic hardship deferment or forbearance. Now, just be careful with that, because again, forbearance means that interest continues to accrue. But with this waiver, you can legit get into a repayment plan that works for you, and it doesn't have to be the highest that works for you. It can be the lowest that works for you, because you have to you self-certify your employment, I believe, up until September of next year, and that date might have changed. But you can self-certify your employment. So meaning you can say, I can afford this, and this is what I'm able to pay. And you can do that to kind of give you some wiggle room to help you get by. And I know it's hard. I mean, that student loan payment that I had pre-COVID was just second to my mortgage. Wow. And by very little, but second to my mortgage. And honestly, that's why, you know, that's part of the reason why I was in forbearance for a while. It's part of the reason why I wasn't in the right repayment plan when it came to PSLF, because I had to go into a repayment plan that I could live off of. And even then it was still tight.
That's right. Exactly. And I think that's relatable for so many people, especially folks, you know, doing jobs at not-for-profits or schools where, you know, we know that these are not careers and jobs that are notorious for high incomes.
Right.
So, so what about for those that are not on that income-driven repayment plan currently, if they adjust the payment plan before October 31st, 2022, going forward, would the prior payment still count on the 120 payment requirement?
Yes. So there is some proposed legislation and it's going to happen, but what they have to do, what the Department of Education does, typically when there's like new rules that are being made, they'll propose changes and then there's a comment period for the public and it's still open. And I can drop the link if anybody wants to make a comment. But the proposed change, which would be implemented in July of 2023, would allow any repayment plan to count. So even if right now you go into, let's say, I'm assuming if you are making payments right now, because if you're not, you know, you don't have to worry about your repayment plan at this time, even if you were to apply for the waiver. But after the waiver expires, whenever that is, if they decide to extend it or not, the change that would be implemented next year would be to allow any repayment plan to count towards
the qualified. That'd be great. Yes. Beyond October 31st.
Absolutely.
Deadline, which is yep. Awesome.
You're listening to a podcast from NextGen Personal Finance. Does your local school district meet the gold standard? A standalone personal finance course for every student before high school graduation? Find out using our nationwide map under the Advocacy tab at www.ngpf.org.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, so I have a sister who, her outstanding student loan balance was probably about almost 40,000. And single mom of two girls. She is work all the time. She's worked up her way. She's a higher level employee at Howard University.
Okay.
Had no idea about PSLF, like truly, right? She put her loans into deferment, into forbearance. She's done so many things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I went to visit her in Maryland and I said to her, listen, you've been working in education at higher education or colleges and universities since we graduated college. So you should have more than 120 payments.
Yeah.
You've been working more than 10 years in education. I don't understand why you're still dealing with these student loans. Haven't you done your PSLF? And she said, what's PSLF?
What?
So I think to your point that you made earlier about millions of people that currently qualify, they have no clue. They're living their life. They're just trying to put food on the table, trying to pay that mortgage, trying to balance their budget, trying to do all these things. They're not looking at the headlines about PSLF and paying attention to Betsy DeVos and paying attention to who's the new Secretary of Education and what the changes are and what the Biden administration is doing. They may not have the capacity to be plugged in that deeply.
Oh, indeed. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I sat with her. We went to her student loan portal. We went to, studentaid.gov. She went, logged in. And I said, oh my Lord, Justinia, you have everything that you need. You just need to, like all of her employers, they were listed at like three different universities she worked at. They were all green checks like next to it, which meant that they were verified, like they were, eligible employers.
Yeah.
So she just had to fill out a form and get her first employer who was not yet verified to sign off on it. And so she faxed them, she went online, figured out a website that allowed her to send a fax on the internet.
She did that.
Yeah, she went online, Googled it. She sent a fax on the internet to her former employer. They signed off, sent it back to her. She submitted all the paperwork and she called me a few weeks ago. I put this on your Instagram.
You did.
She called me crying.
Yeah.
And she's like, I logged into my account and I owe $0. Literally, like before I came to visit her, she had almost $50,000 of student loan debt.
Wow.
And one day, like not one day to the next, but just a couple weeks, it was a zero balance. And all the little hairs on my arms were standing on end because I was like, she has two girls. She's been renting for so long. These student loans have held her back from actually being able to get a home for her and her two girls. And now without that payment, without that debt burden, she's got like, she just feels like she freed up so much potential opportunity for her girls. She's like, I can actually put my girls in gymnastics because I can afford it. I can look at houses. I can see if I can get a mortgage. I was like, this is what's going to happen to so many Americans who are in desperate need of relief right now after so much that we've been dealing
with. It's a game changer.
Absolutely.
Literally.
Absolutely. But to that point about people like my sister who truly had no clue, how do you ensure that if you do log in and you happen to know about it and you submit some documents, how do you know if A, your documents have been received and B, that you are actually in the program?
Yeah. So studentaid.gov is a great resource. You have a loan servicer, but studentaid.gov is the federal government's or the Department of Education's repository for your loans. It can tell you what type of loans you have, how much you owe. Unfortunately, it doesn't quite capture your payment count or if you're in PSLF, but what you'll receive when you submit the PSLF form, what you'll receive is a letter, and it may even be an email. My experience is different, so I'll explain that too. You'll receive an email or a letter from, now it's MOHELA, M-O-H-E-L-A. It used to be Fed Loan Servicing, but they're done at the end of the year. They were the sole administrator of the PSLF program. You'll receive a letter stating that your application was received, which means you are officially in the program. And either on the same letter or a separate letter coming around the same time will be an update to your payment counts. So whether you've entered in PSLF before or you have been in the program and you were recertifying your employment for a specific time frame that might have been missing, you will receive a payment count or an updated payment count. Now, that's assuming MOHELA or FedLoan is not your loan servicer. If FedLoan or MOHELA is your loan servicer, I have FedLoan. I have not been transferred yet, but I will be gone to MOHELA, I'm sure, in the next few months. You can actually upload your form to your dashboard, and that is also where you'll be able to actually track your loan, your payment counts for PSLF. So you'll be able to actually be able to visibly see right then and there when you log in at on demand that you're in the program and how far you're progressing.
That's awesome. That change is so needed. I mean, seriously, yeah. It's about time. I do remember that with my sister, we had to manually do it. So I had her go all the way back. I told her, scroll down as far as you can and look. And she may even have had to pull up a statement where we went through and looked at every single month that she made a payment and we counted them one by one. And I was like, how many was that? She's like, 82. I said, okay, count the next statement. How many was that? She's like, 21. I was like, okay, 82 plus 21. And we were trying to get as close to 120 payments.
Sure.
But one of the things that she noticed was there was a time period where during COVID, where she wasn't making payments. And she was nervous that it wasn't going to count. So can you clear that up, Nika? Because I do think a lot of people need to hear this.
Absolutely. So this is the game changer. Well, I mean, it's all a game changer, but this is the thing I think that has definitely propelled me and a lot of other people in their payment counts. During the COVID forbearance, not making a payment. So I'm talking March of 2020 to today, July 29th of 2022. Those months in which you don't make a payment under the COVID forbearance count towards PSLF. So we're talking nearly what, 2 years, 24 payments of you being able to breathe a little easier, put your money someplace else, you know, your payments are paused, and you still get credit for towards PSLF, the payment count requirement. Yeah. That's big.
Huge.
That's huge because people are still working in public service. You're still teachers, you're still educators, you know, people are still doing the job. And so I think it's what I love about that is it's there's still a lot more that needs to be done, right? Mm-hmm. But it to me it's a small thank you for your service. In that it's one less thing that people who are eligible for PSLF are able to take advantage of. It's one less thing that they have to worry about.
That's right. Absolutely. Now, there are some people who are going to start to feel a little defeated even now with all the changes, just because of like maybe lack of responsiveness. For example, somebody here says, I converted mine to direct consolidated and sent my completed form on June 1st and still haven't heard anything back.
I got you. Yeah. It's one of these things where you're going to kind of have to pack your patience. I know like you're anxious and you're eager to find out where you stand and what your payment counts are. But keep in mind, there are a lot of things that are taking place. They are transferring borrowers from FedLoan to MOHELA. Again, FedLoan was the only servicer servicing public service loan forgiveness. So that's in the works. The other thing is more people are getting hit to the limited waiver and flooding the system with their applications, right?
That's
so
right.
When I initially submitted my waiver, it was probably the same week the announcement came out and I got an update back in 30 days. Now, even when I submitted my last, I didn't do another form, but I got another update, but it took months for me to get the latest update. Like my first update for this year was probably a month ago from me submitting my form back in October of 2021, right? So you do have to pack your patience. I'm sure they're also not fully staffed. We're still in a pandemic, you know, so there's a lot of moving pieces. So I want you to rest assured that they probably have your paperwork. And if you have FedLoan or MOHELA and you've uploaded your paperwork or mailed it in on your dashboard, it'll even say your payment counts, you know, are not up to date. They won't be up to date until we finish processing. And then it'll have like the form that you recently submitted. So that's another way that you'll know that they are in the process of reviewing forms. But it's taking a longer amount of time, the more people that have submitted their paperwork. And as they continue to not only make changes, but have to deal with whatever Biden is going to decide on on forgiveness, on whether the payment and interest pause will be extended, and whether or not they're going to extend the deadline for the limited waiver beyond October 31st. There's a lot of things that are taking place within the department. And so just have a little patience. Now, if you don't hear anything by the end of the year, that's something different. But, right. you know, a few months, it's normal considering the amount of people who are applying.
Right. And all the stuff that they're dealing with, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Now, if there is an educator or teacher today on the call who's like, okay, I'm new to education. I've been working for years and years, but I maybe have just been a teacher for maybe less than 5 or maybe 7 years. Mm-hmm. Is this worth it to still apply, even if you've only been teaching for a few years?
I would. And on top of that, I don't know if we were going to get into this or not, but on top of that, I would also look into teacher loan forgiveness. So, right. So they're different. They're very different. Teacher loan forgiveness is a bit limited, but if you have not been a teacher for 10 years, you can still receive some type of relief with the teacher loan forgiveness program. So when I say it's limited, it's because teacher loan forgiveness will forgive only up to a certain amount. And that amount is $17,500 for 5 consecutive years working full time as a teacher, usually in a low income area or at a qualified school. Mm-hmm. Asterisk, there's a caveat, because if you're not considered a highly qualified or a highly needed, say post or secondary special education instructor or mathematics or science teacher, you can only get up to 5,000.
Yikes.
Right? But the cool thing about both programs is you can actually obtain forgiveness through both. So let's say you've worked the 5 years and let me back up. Let's say you have more. So pause. I hope that helps for anyone who has less than 10 years, because I feel like I'm like about to go off. Okay. So for anyone who has 5 years, but less than 10, teacher loan forgiveness may be an option for you. Now, if you decide that you're going to be a teacher for 15, 20, however many years, you can actually take the 5 years that qualified or got you to teacher loan forgiveness, and the remaining years, you can apply for PSLF and have the remaining amount of your student loans forgiven under that program. But with the limited waiver, hope I'm not confusing anybody, with the limited waiver, let's say you've gotten teacher loan forgiveness because you've worked the 5 consecutive years, whether it's the $5,000 amount or the higher amount. Under the waiver, you can actually use those 5 years that got you to teacher loan forgiveness and you can apply it to PSLF. Outside of the waiver, they have to be different. So you cannot use the same 5 years to count towards PSLF, but under the waiver you can. And that expires October 31st.
Got it. So some folks are bringing this up, and I actually did prepare a question about this for you, because okay. I know that when you do debt-free gonna be work on Instagram and you do partnerships and all this kind of work, people come at you. Listen, people are ready to attack. They're ready to pounce. Okay.
They're out there.
They're critical because they say that, you know, your opinions regarding student loan debt are problematic. They don't agree with you that people should be forgiven the student loan. And one of the main reasons why they say is because where is the money going to come from to pay for this? Sure. And how are we just forgiving it, writing it off? Yeah. Where's the money coming from? So
yeah.
A, how do you address those folks? And B, like in general, when this is something that you're trying to help so many people and people are just like coming at you and asking, how did you kind of deal with that generally too?
I don't pay those people any mind. Let me tell you something. Sharing, being vulnerable enough to share your money journey and your debt payoff journey on social media gives you thick skin. Not to mention I'm a woman and I'm a Black woman at that. So, you know, I think I was primed during the time where I was really sharing my debt payoff and, oh, why do you have so much debt? Because unfortunately, people are very judgmental and they try to shame you for your past money mistakes. So I think I was pretty primed for that. But, you know, a lot of times when people talk about student loan forgiveness and they're saying, oh, us taxpayers this and, well, I paid off my student loan, so you should too. You know, good for you. Seriously, good for you. Here's the thing. Taxes work like this. Mm-hmm. I don't have children, but my tax dollars go to programs that subsidize early childhood education programs.
That's right.
Okay.
Public schools. That's
right. If you're a renter, public schools. Right. If you're a renter, your tax dollars go to subsidized first-time homebuyer programs. Taxes, you don't always benefit from directly from where your tax dollars go. And, you know, I still haven't quite figured out why this is a thing, why this is the hill that people are willing to die on. Why is it this that bothers you so much? And I even had someone say something about, you know, well, why should we pay for your life choices? Well, good for you for deciding to go to school and having a parent or a family member help you, or that helps supplement the cost of your education. But are we mostly women on here? The other thing is, we have to worry about the pay gap. So that's a whole other conversation. So some of us didn't have a choice not to go to college, right? Some of us didn't have that choice. So we had, and the only way we could do it, we had to take on debt. So understanding, you know, having seen the data in the research, having my lived experience with student loans, talking to so many of you about how student loans stop you from doing things like get married, buy a home, have children. Some people can't even retire. You know, I've come across older people, people as old as my grandmother, who have student loan debt, and they're still trying to do work. Knowing that, I lean into that. And so, yeah, it hurts sometimes to see like the nasty comments and saying, I'm saying false, you know, I'm spilling, you know, false information, or why should we have to pay for this? And, you know, if I did this, then you can too. One, it's very much apathetic and very much out of touch, right? Because it's assuming that because that's your experience and that's everyone else's experience. So, right. The people, the 40 plus million borrowers across the $1.75 trillion student loan debt in America, we're all lying. Like we're all saying, you know, that we're having trouble making these payments and we need this debt to go.
Right.
Seriously. So I don't know if I answered. I think I did. Like I really did. My tolerance level is really short with these people, but I do always try to, when I respond, and I don't respond to everyone, but I try to respond with facts. I try to respond with data. I try to get them to listen to another perspective, another life experience.
That's right.
And yes, it sucks to have to pay taxes, but that's, we all do it.
That's right.
And there's a quote, and I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like a rising tide lifts all boats or something
that's
like
right.
that.
You did there not is butcher a, it. That's exactly yes, right.
There is an overall benefit for student loan forgiveness and student debt cancellation, not to mention the government had a role, they're complicit in this crisis that we're in. And the way the programs were designed, I mean, they work the way they're supposed to, but this debt has spiraled out of control.
Right.
And so I'm all about holding the people accountable who contributed to this problem. And that's it. So don't argue with me in my comments. Hold the government accountable for doing what it's supposed to do.
Right. And you know what? Everything that's happening right now, to your point, it has been a wake-up call, because obviously the government is making changes. Even just the simple changes that you mentioned are going to happen in the Mojita portal so that you can see what's going on. Even that, you think they would have done that if it wasn't for the student loan debt crisis? You think they wouldn't have really reflected and figured out what went wrong? How did we disinform or misinform or mislead people? How can we make sure we don't do that again? Okay, let's change up the structure of the promissory note. Let's change up the structure of how we do this so that young people understand. Let's make sure the portal is super clear. Let's make sure people recognize that interest is accruing. Let's tell them, you know, these updates more consistently and make sure they're aware of what happens when they start paying, even if they're not required to.
Sure.
You know, educating is so important. And the government is generally pretty good about that. With all these free government websites with so much information and education for free, it just seems like this was one area where that didn't quite happen. And now they're making up for it, which I think it's long overdue. But listen, I'm here to just say, good thing it's happening.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this administration has its things, right? But one thing I can say about at least who has been installed at the Department of Education. I mean, the person who's running studentaid.gov came from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. These are people who were already in service to the country, right? And they came in and weren't afraid to call a thing a thing, a broken system, and then trying to do what they can legally within their, you know, regulatory oversight and trying to fix it. So yeah, I'm excited about the changes that are being made. Again, I need to see more more long-term systemic changes take place, but it's a good, this is a good start.
Absolutely. We're moving in the right direction for sure.
Yeah.
In trying to make it right. Okay, a couple more questions here. Do you have to consolidate all of your federal student loans to qualify any of your past payments?
Not all of your, so this is two parts. So not all of your federal student loans need to be consolidated, but with PSLF, for example, Parent PLUS loans is a no. And I can't remember if Graduate PLUS loans are qualify or not, and and federally held FFEL loans also. So you may have to, and I have links that'll help you figure out what you need to do. It, like, let's say, depending on the type of loans you have. What you have to do is you may have to consolidate because you need direct federal loans, right? And let's say you have one direct federal loan and then the other loans are not. You can, with that one direct federal loan, that qualifies you to be able to consolidate all of your loans into a direct consolidated loan. At the end of the day, you just want to make sure that if you do need to qualify, you are qualifying into a loan that qualifies for PSLF.
Y'all in the chat, everybody who's here live in the chat is just like singing your praises, Nika, that you are a blessing. You're amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Session. Thank you. What you can do to thank her is follow her on Instagram. She has over 50,000 followers on Instagram because her content is amazing and she's on point.
You.
Obviously, she's so matter of fact. She knows her stuff and she just, you're very relatable. So it's not like somebody being condescending, giving you this information that you should know. She's just so open and helpful. So please go follow her if you're on Instagram. And if not, you can check her out, her website, and keep up with her there, which is debtfreegonnabe.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do, listen, no judgment, no shame, personal finance content. We all have made mistakes. We're all trying to figure things out. It's a safe space and I work hard to make it and keep it a safe space. So please feel free to join me there. Drop me an email, drop me a DM, check out my website. I'd love to be able to connect with you.
Few final housekeeping items before we go. We'll put links to the resources that Nika mentioned. You can find those in the show notes at www.ngpf.org/podcast. Better yet, subscribe, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. If you're a longtime listener, or even if you're not, leave a review because that will help boost our rating so our guests can deliver their message to a larger audience. I want to thank Ren McKino, who produces our podcast and the show notes every week. Thank you again, Ren. So on behalf of Yanelli, Nika, and myself, I want to thank you again.